It's the appointed time, so we will pass the appointed time. We'll open the House Health Care Committee for April 18th, 2011. Just for those of you who are hanging on the edge of your seats with excitement, House Bill 3409 will be carried over till Wednesday. House Bill 2100 will be carried over till Wednesday. We will not be hearing House Bill 3519. We need to adopt these, don't we?
We did adopt those.
House Bill 2726 will be carried over till Wednesday. Okay, looks like that's it. There's some others. We'll only be adopting amendments today and then carrying over till Wednesday for various reasons. But
2378.
Oh, 2378, yes. 2378 we're going to not hear today, but we're going to put that into an interim committee between now and next February, because I'm told by the current working committee chair that people aren't close yet. So I am assuming, when I take this bill and tape it up on the wall of my office, people will get close between now and February, so we won't have to run the bill again. But we can run the bill again if people don't get together on this. So I would strongly suggest that in the interim we take sandbox lessons and learn how to play together, and then we'll be able to move something. Take that as a cautious suggestion. Everything else, it looks like we're going to move today in some respect. And we're going to start with opening a work session on House Bill 2505 for Speaker Hanna, so he can go do something else he needs to be doing right now. You're on.
Which one is this?
You prepared? You ready to go?
We're ready, yes.
All right.
We're
Thank you so much. Chair Thompson, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Hanna, State Representative from House District 7. As you know, I introduced House Bill 2505 with a very simple concept in mind. It went as follows. If we eliminate double coverage of PEB employees, that is, those who receive their own coverage while also receiving coverage through a spouse's plan, for example, we would be able to save money by reducing the number of people for whom we are paying premiums. Now, those premiums at $1,200 per month per employee, it would seem, would equate to millions and millions of dollars in savings. However, in the course of my work on this legislation, I have learned that reducing coverage actually costs the state more money. This is an interesting story, or to me at least. How do you reduce coverage and cost yourself money? I was told that eliminating these 1,200 people from double coverage so drastically drives up our overall composite rate for all of the other thousands of PEB employees that the state would actually lose money. Follow me here. That got me to thinking, how is it that removing just 1,200 people from a pool as large as PEBS could have such a drastic negative impact? Perhaps it is because of the richness of benefit that we offer. And those are not my words. Those are the words of the agency representatives I met with. Or perhaps there is simply, quote, no better plan in Oregon. Again, the words of the agency, not mine. A rich benefit, no better plan, yet we ask state employees to contribute nothing to their health benefits, And we are desperately struggling to balance a human service budget riddled with program cutbacks, reductions in provider payments, and other very severe impacts. Amid all of the budget struggles, is it appropriate for us to continue offering such a rich benefit? Are there slight changes, or even big ones, we could make to the benefit package to better manage utilization rates or lower our risk pool? Given the 20% increase we are facing in cost in this program, I certainly hope we will consider doing so. Another reason House Bill 2505 might not save money like we thought is this. PEB actually charges a 40% management fee for administering opt-out employees. I want to be sure everybody's clear on this, and please ask the agency so that you get the math right, like I hope I have. PEB actually charges a 40% management fee for administering opt-out employees. Those that are currently opting out, we pay a 40% management fee to the employees. You see, the state gives the money to agencies for each of their employees, covered or not. Then the agency sends PEB the money for the employees who receive health care or those who opt out. I see two issues here. First, the agency is receiving budgeted funds from the legislature based on full-time equivalents, FTEs. I'll describe that. But if an FTE sits vacant, they do not have to pay that money over to PEB because there are no benefits incurred. Simply put, it is another incentive for state agencies to hold vacant full-time equivalent positions. Secondly, the agency gives PEB money for employees who voluntarily opt out, and PEB gives a small stipend to those individuals. I support this concept because it still saves us money. However, PEB charges the agencies a 40% administrative fee for managing those opt-outs. Again, someone chooses to leave, they get paid a small stipend, but we pay a 40% fee. A department like PEB that is already established for the sole purpose of managing administrative action related to health insurance for state employees needs to charge 40% to send an employee an opt-out check. It seems exorbitant. Colleagues, I know PEB is generally not the topic of this hearing, and I am certainly not pointing fingers at individual employees. I also cannot, in good conscience, ask you to proceed forward on House Bill 2505 based on what I have learned about this process. But I implore you to look further into the escalating costs associated with PEB coverage, and please use this as a starting point for what is a much bigger, much more important, and much more expensive conversation. I appreciate the opportunity you have given me and wish you a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair?
Yes?
Can I comment? It's very interesting what you said. I've come to the same conclusion from a different route. PEB is a state agency, and the other money is state agency, so a bit... We're basically talking about how we're moving money in the ways and means process among state agencies. This whole thing would have been true until state went self-insured. As long as state is self-insured, the money goes to SAFE. At the end of the year, they figure out their expenses and their revenue, and it changes how much they ask for in the budget the next year. But it doesn't make any difference It doesn't make any difference to PEB whether it collects, I mean, in any inherent way, in terms of the expenses, whether it collects from he and I, if we were married here in Oregon, and whether, because the expenses would be the same for both of us, it would be how much we transfer in a paper transfer from one state agency to another state agency. So it's got a lot to do with ways and means, but the added expense would be the $300 a month we would give him for opting out. Because that would be $4,000 in actual cash that actually moves out of a state budget into an individual pocket. And that would end up costing the state, ultimately, however you define the state, about $4,000 more per person. So somehow we need to get the Ways and Means budgeting process right, but the total state dollars really don't change in this model.
Co-chairs, I'm not sure I heard a question, but
No. It was just a comment because I mean I was thinking about this and came basically to the same answer. This could only end up costing the state more money doing this rather than less money by the extent to which we pass money out of pocket.
Well, Mr. Co-chair, if I may, when you use the basic math and say that one agency is going to pay to the other agency either $1,200 for one employee or $2,400 for two employees,
right,
and you quit paying one of those, your head says, we just saved $1,200.
Well,
then less than the $300 that you would pay as a stipend means you saved $900. The true additional cost is because, as you say, there is a cash outlay for the payment, but we already pay an opt-out payment anyway. But what PEB is saying is the additional cost is because you lower the pool size, and so the aggregate cost per employee is higher.
Yeah, but not the aggregate cost to the state. Not, I mean, if PEB was an outside insurance company, this would all be a whole different thing. But PEB is self-insured. It gets some money, it pays some expenses. At the end of the year, it balances out. And I think we have a Ways and Means problem here. But I don't think we have any real extra state money. But it doesn't matter because we come to the same conclusion at this moment.
Yeah, and at this point, we're still shuffling dollars around, and we're spending 40% of it on any opt-out for the administrative side. And that seems exorbitant to me. And I hope that as we review all of these issues, we'll find a way to either better understand how it could cost that much to handle an opt-out, or ask the agency to get a little more efficient at that process. Thank you very much.
Sounds clear.
Thank you.
Okay, what do we want to do with this?
You want to close the hearing for
the hearing.
Okay, so we're going to move the dash ones? Okay, we'll close the hearing then on House Bill 2505. And open a work session on House Bill 3185.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3185. We had a hearing on Friday. This was the measure that directs ODOT to convene a work group to study the at-risk program, specifies the membership of the work group, and directs the work group to report the recommendations to the appropriate legislative interim committees no later than October 1st, 2012. This was the medical assessment. The medical assessment scientific-based bill that Representative Berger brought forth. We did adopt the Dash 3 amendments, and we did receive all the proper paperwork. We have no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact on the bill, Mr. Chair. And I am looking for...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3185 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Right on. Chair Greenlick has moved House Bill 3185 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I have
amended.
A couple of questions. First of all, because I wasn't here on Friday, I just want to confirm this is a moves away from the original version of the bill. Instead, requires the agency to appoint a work group to look at this issue and make recommendations to a subsequent legislature. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
And then my other question is how, it's very serious, I would like to know how to get a minimal fiscal on a work group bill, because that is a really good trick in this building.
I'd like to
when you can
that.
Figure that out, and somehow this bill managed to thread that needle. So anybody can figure that one out for me.
I think we need an interim study group on fiscals.
my impression is it may not thread that needle in the Senate.
Aha. Okay.
Any further discussion on House Bill 3185? Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Yes.
Representative Widener?
Excused.
Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kenner?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Greenwood?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye. House Bill 3185 is passed, and we will ask Representative Berger to carry that bill. 2100.
Close the work session.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 3185. To 364.
Yeah, but I don't see John Powell in here.
Okay, let's hold that one.
Pardon.
And we will open a work session on House Bill 3344.
Bruce came in and talked about this one. Okay. I think we're dropping it. He's dropping it.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Do we want to wait on that bill for?
Go. Yeah, wait.
Okay.
Go to 241.
Co-Tech coming.
Go to the next page.
Okay, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 3344 until we can find missing people. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2401. We'll get this right, folks. Just stick around.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2401, you may recall, had a public hearing a month or so ago. This was brought forward to us by the family physicians. We have since received a Dash 2 amendment that removes the appropriation, and we also got the co-speakers to sign off on rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. That is the Dash 2, Mr. Chair.
2401.
What the measure does is encourages the Oregon Health Education Center program, which is within the Oregon Health Sciences University, to create a family medicine residency network, utilizing any sort of private partnerships or fundraising mechanisms that they're able to obtain. We have not adopted. Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill dated 4811 to House Bill 2401.
Representative Greenlick has moved the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2401, dated 4811. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2401 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, as amended, with a due pass recommendation. Do I have to take off the referral?
Yes. And
with the removal of the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Greenlick has moved House Bill 2401.
The due pass recommendation.
As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with a subsequent referral, rescind.
Please.
Subsequent referral to Committee on Ways and Means
be rescinded.
I read the whole thing was okay. Any discussion? Hearing none.
Yeah,
I think we take a roll on that, don't we?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Excuse.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, so what are we going to do now?
We need a carrier.
We need a carrier for that bill.
The bill
2401.
I'll carry it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that will be Co-Chair Greenlick. Close the work session on 2401.
Okay, our Co-Tech is here.
Oh, so we can go back to.
The bottom on
this
the last page.
Okay, we will open a work session on House Bill 3344, and I believe Representative Kotek has some words of wisdom. And Representative Kennemer.
Words of wisdom is a high bar. How much is some information?
Good afternoon, colleagues. Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. Nice to see you again.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, only thing I want to say about House Bill 3344 is I think it's a great idea, and I hope you pass the bill. We really do need to provide some stability in the funding for problem gambling prevention and treatment, and we have said that 1% of lottery funds will go to these services, caused somewhat by our own doing. And the problem has been, though, that as lottery funds have fluctuated, so has that funding, and that really does create some havoc. And so if we're committed to the 1%, we have to commit to some stability, and that's what the bill does. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Kenner, would you like to add to that?
I think Representative Kotek said it well, and I think if we can stabilize funding, that's a gigantic step. Frankly, we all believe it needs to be a lot higher, but that's not a feasibility in this session.
Any questions or discussion for either representative?
Well, for the administrator, we don't have the information to move it yet. Is that right?
That is correct, Mr.
There's not an amendment on this one. That's the other one. Okay.
You did get a revenue impact statement that should be in your folder, and we have not received the fiscal yet. But this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Well, just close out.
And carry it over.
Okay, I'm going to close the hearing or the work session on House Bill 3344, and we will carry that over until Wednesday.
And many thanks to the co-chairs, too, guys.
Kotek has something to do with 3559.
Okay, let's open a work session on House Bill 2271. And we will call Representative Kotek to the whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tina Kotek.
You're way ahead of us, I can tell.
I'll just stay here. State Representative from House District 44, thank you for having me back on House Bill 2271. This started out as our never events bill, saying that when things that should never happen in a hospital and other facilities happen, you shouldn't be able to bill for them. And what you have in front of you, I believe you have a -5 amendment. My wonderful staff, Alex Burke, has put together a summary of what that is so you can understand the -5. After we had the first public hearing, we got some feedback from a variety of folks about, well, why not align it better with what Medicare is doing? The original bill spoke specifically to the National Quality Forum's definition of never events and then said for those that aren't currently paid for by Medicare, you shouldn't be able to bill for them in the state of Oregon. And so the more research we did, this, we found out how complicated this is. So in the -5s, what you're seeing is to bring the bill completely in line with Medicare's policy as much as possible. So we're not creating another standard, but we're really trying to follow what the federal government is doing. We try to clarify the definition of healthcare facility, again, trying to align it with Medicare, and you'll see in the table there, I think you have a table that looks something like this. Yes? Okay. In that first column, it talks about included in Medicare HAC policy. HAC is healthcare acquired condition. So before we were talking about never events or adverse events or reportable events, but the way Medicare talks about it is healthcare acquired conditions. And we tried to align that as close as possible with ORS 442.015 with their healthcare facility definition. What you see here is that Medicare right now only deals with hospitals, but as they move in to develop further rules at the federal level, it will continue to cover different facilities. And the way I believe the bill we've drafted at this point is to say when those changes take place, other facilities in Oregon would also be included, depending on when Medicare changes. So Medicare would be, their change at the federal level would be the trigger. And if you move further down, we talk about changing the term from serious reportable event to health care acquired condition. Again, the federal terminology for things that shouldn't be happening in these facilities and therefore not being able to be built. And Alex did a great job of putting together a chart here that shows you the type of adverse event that we had talked about in the original bill. You have three columns. You have NQF, which is National Quality Forum, which was what we originally referenced in the first version of the bill, which is a nonprofit group that says you know, makes an attempt to find these different adverse events. The second column is the Oregon Association of Hospital Health Systems and whether or not these things can be billed for. So as you see here, if you go down the column, many of these things are not billed for. And then you have Medicare, healthcare, acquired condition. Now, you'll see that a lot of the never, never events, the really horrible stuff, are not on their list. But I take your attention to the very bottom of the table, where you get to those things that Medicare rules would apply to non-billing that the other two do not. And you see things about catheter-associated infections, catheter-associated urinary tract infections, surgical site infections, and other things. Items that are probably more common than the other types of never events and the other types of adverse events that you see in the further up. So with these changes, it actually says, you know, the Hospital Association was testifying that we've already told our folks not to bill for these things now. And so what I heard was, well, this isn't as effective as it could be. So we went back to the Medicare alignment. And as you see, Medicare going to even is going beyond those really egregious things that really shouldn't be happening to things that happen more on a daily basis that we really need to get a handle on. So we're trying to follow that trend in the federal policy with these Dash 5 amendments. The Dash 5 also would apply to individual providers, so neither providers nor hospitals could bill for these events. So there was a concern last time we were only talking about facilities. We're trying to also get at the providers who are actually performing the surgeries or whatever. And then lastly, the Dash 5 removes enforcement language because it has become clear to us from our understanding that the Attorney General's office already has some power to bring civil actions, primarily under Medicaid fraud. So we believe that there's appropriate enforcement already at the AG's authority, so we took out any of the enforcement language. So I understand, colleagues, that's a lot of information. We're not ready to move the bill today because I don't think we have a fiscal, but we wanted to come and testify and explain the difference from the original bill to the Dash 5 since we hadn't been back in a couple weeks. So happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions for Representative Kotek?
Yes, sir. The Hospital Association says they're telling hospitals not to charge for some things now. Would this end up, if followed, rather than what the Hospital Association says they do now, leaving some things that would not be charged for under the current plan but might be charged for under the amendment to the...
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
What's correct?
I believe you're saying, does it expand some of the things they're currently...
And the opposite.
Okay. Maybe rephrase.
The Hospital Association now says hospitals should not charge for n number of things.
Correct.
Now we're saying, well, here's a new set of things. If they follow this rather than the current plan, would they end up not charging for things that they would have charged for under the existing system?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the clarification. Well, I take the association at their word now that their folks are being told not to bill for these things. And I think when you're talking about the most egregious adverse events, you know, operating on the wrong limb, things like that,
right.
I think what we heard in the last was, yes, people are not billing for those things. Now, do I have proof of that? No, but that is what I'm hearing is become the norm. What I like about aligning it with Medicare and getting at some of the other acquired conditions, such as infections, that's really, I think, where we need to go if we're really going to get some of the patient safety issues. And so we've shifted the bill a bit, but I think in a more effective manner.
And this is the gut and stuff, right?
I don't have the actual amendment in front of me.
It is the gut
yes,
stuff.
Yeah. It was comprehensive enough, that seemed easier.
And you want to move the amendment now?
I think we're perishing.
I'm going to hold off. I have some more stuff I want to chase after, but I'll wait since we're not
okay.
moving today.
Okay, we can't move this bill today because we don't have the ways and means, but we can, or fiscal, I mean, we can adopt the Dash 5s. Do we have a motion to do that?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated 4-18-11. To House Bill 2271.
Representative Greenlake moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2271, dated 4-18-11. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Hearing none, the Dash 5 amendments are thereby adopted, and we'll close the work session, or we'll move this to Wednesday, carryover. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2271.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
and
colleagues.
We'll drop down to now open a work session on House Bill 3559. And we will call as our first witness Representative Kotek. Oh, there you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is working out very well today.
Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, back again, House Bill 3559. So this is our payment reform bill that you so graciously gave a hearing on a couple weeks ago. This would look at trying to find consistency in how inpatient care is how billing is, the methodology behind how billing is arranged. And what you see here with the dash threes is you also see some changes to the bill, and I think you have a document walking through the dash threes. Again, another complicated topic, and this actually is a simpler bill on the second go-around. We wanted to make sure, again, what we're trying to accomplish here is facilities using the same methodology, so we have consistency and transparency about how costs are derived, and using an established methodology from the federal government, a.k.a. Medicare payment methodologies. So the dash threes do a couple things. First of all, they say that all DRG hospitals and ambulatory surgical centers in Oregon would follow the most recent Medicare payment methodologies as outlined by the Oregon Health Authority in rule. The bill allows the Oregon Health Authority some flexibility in rule to also allow for use of alternative payment methodologies such as pay for performance and bundling of different services together. It was impressed upon us after the first hearing that that would be a nice flexibility to provide for. Again, not taking away from the consistency, but also recognizing the fact that payment methodologies will be changing as we move into other areas of health reform. The dash threes would say that the health authority would be advised by a work group of providers, insurers, and consumers of the types of healthcare services that are subject to the methodologies, so bringing in the stakeholders to figure out what those methodologies should be. The effective date in the dash three has been changed to align with the effective date for updated Medicare payment methodologies. In my opinion, as soon as we can get doing this, the better. All DRG hospitals would need to start using this payment methodology on October 1st of 2012, when the new Medicare methodologies are updated, and then all ambulatory surgical centers would have to start using this payment methodology on January 1st of 2013. And finally, the bill just says that insurers would have to attest to their compliance with this methodology. Providers would have to attest to their compliance with this methodology to the Oregon Health Authority during the contracting process. So we want the insurance plans who do business with the state, whether it's OEB, PEB, the Oregon Health Plan, to attest to the fact that they're going to do these methodologies on this timeline. We don't currently have an enforcement component in the dash threes because, frankly, we couldn't quite figure out how to do that. So we said, let's just get started with putting the rest of the framework into the bill, and that's what you have with the dash threes.
Any questions for Representative Kotek?
It's a pretty complicated amendment.
Well, as has been pointed out, we can't move that bill today. We can only adopt the dash threes. So I would entertain a motion for adopting the dash threes.
Chair, I move we adopt the dash three amendments dated 4/18/11 to House Bill 2559.
No, 35.
I'm sorry, 3559.
Chair Greenlick has moved that we adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 3559 dated 4/18/11. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, they are so adopted. You are very convincing.
And the intention is to move this to Ways and Means on Wednesday?
Yes, we'll carry this over to Wednesday and then move it on.
We would very much like to see this bill, so thank you very much, and thank you for your attention. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Seeing you all.
Okay.
019. Is this close?
Is Tomei still here?
Huh? No, she'll carry the bill.
Okay. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 348.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 348 had a public hearing ironically, on March 18th, and here we are, April 18th. You'll recall this designates May of each year as Lupus Awareness Month. We had Senator Rosenbaum and several of her folks come and explain the bill and the issues around lupus in an effort to keep the bill moving. The bill is put before the committee now to take action if they so choose. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact on the bill, Mr. Chair. And it left the Senate floor with 29 ayes and one excused.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Greenlick has moved Senate Bill 348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? The clerk call the roll, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Representative
Coyle? Yes.
Representative
Reitner? Excused.
Vice Chair
Cannon?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Kinnemer?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye.
Chair Thompson?
Aye. We will, bill passes, we will assign this to Representative Tomei to carry on the floor. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 348. Okay, we will now open a work session on House Bill 3019.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3019 was the bill that was brought before the committee in February. You'll recall this expanded the immunity from liability for health care providers who volunteer for charitable organizations. We also heard House Bill 3232, several folks from Central Oregon representing, I apologize, Mr. Chair, I forgot the group, but it was Representative Wisnitz's group, asked to incorporate some of their issues, which were around veterans and homeless veterans. And you have before you the Dash 3 amendments that includes the homeless individuals. It also adds pharmacists and optometrists to the existing list of folks that can be registered for a limited liability program through their regulatory boards. We do, like I said, we have the Dash 3 amendments, but we do not have the fiscal or revenue impact on this bill, Mr. Chair.
I guess we will move the Dash 3 amendments then, and we will wait for the rest of it.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments dated dated 4/15/11 to House Bill 3019. Yes,
that's it.
That ends the sentence. Right?
Chair Greenlick has moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3019 dated 4/15/11. Is there any discussion?
Okay. Can we hold it for a second?
You bet.
This is a complex amendment, and I recommend everybody take a little time before Wednesday to have a chance to look at it. But right now, let's put it in.
Do you want to put something on the record?
Oh, after the motion.
No. Okay. Anything else on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Amendments are so adopted. Dash 3 amendments.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to acknowledge for the record you have some written testimony from the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association on the original bill from last week on House Bill 3019 on their concerns. Also like to highlight that there was an email sent out over the weekend that the proponents of 3232, there was a phrase left out of the amendment as it was left out in 3232. They're asking if a friendly amendment could be attached on the Senate side. I just want to bring the committee attention to that should an amendment happen on this bill on the Senate side if the bill makes it over, Mr. Chair.
Do we have a mechanism to send that over with the bill, or do we just...
We just send a message.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the thing that I was raising on this is there was some concern in the original bill, and neither Representative Canada nor I have had a chance to look at it, about what was a charitable organization outside of the context of the Evie Imaginary definition and 501c3, and I don't know whether the Dash 3's cleaned that up. I haven't had a chance to look at it, whether it's still in it.
Mr. Chair, I believe that it is still in it, even with the Dash 3's. We also have a memo from LC that responds to the question about the difference between a charitable corporation and a charitable organization. That memo concludes that a charitable organization is a much broader term, and that there therein lies my concerns about the bill.
And mine as well. I don't think there's any way to deal with that. I mean,
not
short of an amendment.
Right.
I could, Mr. Chair. I have not looked at the amendment carefully enough to know how it deals with this issue.
Let's review it for Wednesday.
What
and
line
then,
is that in?
In the original bill, it's the very beginning. It's up at
Can we send that on to rules if we can't resolve it on this side?
Yeah, that might be a good thing to do.
If it's a minor fix.
Sure.
Well, it may be a major fix, and that's the problem. The problem is that that was put in there, I think, to meet the needs of a particular organization, and I'm not sure what was intended.
Well,
so
we want it right when it comes out of here.
But moving the rules might be a solution.
I think, you know, perhaps with some additional time, my comfort with this will grow, and I will look at it before Wednesday, because as I look closer, I think it did actually take out that part of the bill and now is focused on in a somewhat different way. So,
great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will close the work session then on House Bill 3019, and we will bring that back on Wednesday for further resolution, whatever that
Very
might
well.
Be. Where are we now? Is that a public hearing yet?
We could.
Work session's done.
3164 left?
No, we have several.
Oh, we're waiting for Powell.
Yeah, I don't know.
We didn't do 3164.
No, yet. We're waiting for John Powell, and I haven't had a chance to leave the room to see where he's at.
He's not here. So the question is, do we move it with or without his comments?
Carry it over.
We'll carry it over? Can I carry it over to Wednesday?
House Bill 3164, we're going to carry over till Wednesday.
That does it. Oh, Representative Johnson.
Right.
He's back here.
What do we have?
It's almost 4 o'clock, isn't it?
What's on 3519?
3519.
Oh, that, never mind. Never mind.
3519, we skipped.
Yep. And that one? Yeah. Okay. You want to go get... Can you stand at ease for just a minute while
we
I get
can
these
stand
notes?
At ease for... open a public hearing on House Bill 3478. I believe Representative Johnson is sitting there laughing at us, prepared to testify. Technology is wonderful when it works. And it just did.
And when it's not, something other. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the House Health Care Committee. For the record, Mark Johnson, State Representative, House District 52. Before I begin my comments or my prepared remarks, House Bill 3478 began as something different than it will be today. It was one of those bills, like others were, that were crafted for this session that would have given school districts the ability to, for some length of time at least, opt out of the Oregon Education Benefit Board system. It's apparent that perhaps that's not the most productive track to take this session, so what you have before you will be considering today is an amendment to that bill that I think will find broad support amongst all of concerned citizens today and legislators, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about. So I'll go ahead and just begin my remarks and hopefully have those in front of you. If there's one piece of news that seems to dominate our news these days, it is that our public school districts are hurting. Reductions in state school support and other factors such as the PERS rate increase have led to a great deal of financial instability. This instability is manifested around our state in the form of school district employee layoffs and salary and benefit freezes, or in some cases, reductions. The Oregon Education Benefit Board was created by Senate Bill 426 in 2007. According to OEB's website, the board was created, quote, because of the concern about the state of health care and the skyrocketing premiums being charged to school districts in Oregon. OEBB was considered an emergency, and the board became effective from the moment the bill was signed. The bill requires school districts to participate, except for those who may be large enough to self-insure. Today, OEBB is the only option for health insurance for the vast majority of school districts across the state. Which brings us back to today. Over the past few years, school districts have seen their insurance rates increase at rates far worse than they had increased prior to the creation of OEBB. You have before you testimony from Mr. Nick Hogan, business manager of Hoosier County School District, detailing the impact of these rate increases on employees there. Hood River is not alone because most school districts have caps on their insurance benefits, and the vast majority of these increases fall on the employees themselves. Classified employees are particularly hard hit. Those lower paid employees are now seeing most of their paycheck go to pay for their health insurance. Keep in mind that these are the same employees who are most likely to be laid off in these very difficult times. School districts are asking for help, and their employees are asking for relief. The Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3478 would simply create a task force to study the impact of OEB on school districts that participate in the plan. It seems like the least we can do for the employees who are doing their very best to teach the kids of this state during these trying times. So, members of the committee, co-chairs, just refer you to the Dash 2 amendments to 3478. Basically, what this does, it takes the framework that was already in Senate Bill 426 to create a task force to study the effectiveness of OEB. And this committee is to report back to the legislature with recommendations for any additional legislation no later than October 1st, 2012. The only modification that you find in the Dash 2 amendments are that, as you look at page 2, line 1 and 2, the purpose of the task force was to research costs savings to the state. And what we're proposing is simply to insert cost savings to each participating school district. So it's a very simple fix that I believe will focus the attention where the focus is due. My point would be state employees aren't covered by OEB. These would be Oregon education-related employees employed in the public education system, different than state employees who would be under PEB, I believe. So therefore, it's a very targeted fix. It puts the attention where I think it's due, which is trying to just determine if the system is working as it was designed to work and therefore hopefully we can determine whether this is the proper path to consider and to maintain down the future, down future as we go forward. And again, the adage here is this is based on trying to find savings for school district employees who are in these very difficult times. You're caught between a rock and a hard place with the current economic climate that exists in district, and they're seeing their benefit portions of their compensation skyrocket and consume a lot of their income. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions, and there are some more proponents here in person to testify, as well as the two people you have on the phone.
Are there any questions for Representative Johnson? Margaret?
Okay. Part of this comes, and I appreciate the task force idea on this, even though some of you don't like task force. I think on something like this, it's very important because this is like deja vu all over again. I mean, I bargained public employee for teacher and classified benefits for 30 years, and this is kind of an ongoing theme because I remember the days when we would go through and bargain 15% rate increases and keep our fingers crossed, and then they would go up 22%. And it went like this. And so I just want to kind of caution, this is not a new phenomenon. And when we would go through and things got, and most of it was through Oregon School Boards Association, which for quite a long time kept the rates down fairly low. Okay. But we started looking at other rates, and there were other insurance companies that said, well, we can give you a better deal. The only problem is they couldn't get the, you know, what the experience rating was and so on and so forth. So I just want to caution the task force that this is not something that's new, and I think if you look at a historical perspective on this and see what it is, hopefully it'll give a little more insight on it because this is a problem we've been dealing with forever. And in the private sector, rates go up. The rates that are going up for OAB are not uncommon in private sector either. So this is almost like an industry-wide problem. But I appreciate the approach that you're taking on this bill very much.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Johnson. I think I understand where you're trying to come from on this. And I might be able to get there if I think it aligns with where the question I think this task force ought to be answering. It seems that the most important question is how can we, as a state, on a statewide basis, spend fewer dollars on health care to get, you know, equal benefits? And I don't know if this language gets at it. I have a concern that by looking at what's happening, the experience of each participating district, we may not be asking that bigger and more important question of what's happening statewide, what the consequences of opting out of this larger pool will be for the remainder of those within the pool. It's a really complicated subject, and that's my concern. Do you have any?
Well, Representative Cannon, co-chairs, Representative Cannon, thank you for that. I think that what hopefully the task force will discover is just exactly perhaps what are those cost drivers to the OEB plan. And I think you'll hear this from some of the other proponents here today that are on the phone and so forth. But one of the complaints I've heard is that the plan began as perhaps a fairly bare bones or a pretty run-of-the-mill offering, let's just say. But as time has progressed, there have been many more add-ons to the types of coverages that the districts are required to provide that have driven up the cost. And if the districts had the ability to maybe choose a plan that fit their best needs and the needs of their employees, that might be something that could enable the cost to be down rather than have a one-size-fits-all. But it's just some districts don't want to have all of the Christmas tree ornaments, if you will, that maybe are being hung onto this plan because it's being driven by one organization that mandates what kind of coverage that they provide. Yeah, I think it's a part of the discussion that would be helpful, I guess, for the task force to be able to research that and just find out if there could be some potential savings by allowing the districts perhaps to modify the coverages that they provide.
Thanks.
Representative Greenlake.
Yeah, I want to ask a question. First, I think there are seven different options that are available from a relatively stripped down to a relatively complex. I don't think it's everybody being forced into the high option.
I think if you look at Nick Hogan's testimony there from Hood River School District, he talks about how his choices are quite limited now. There aren't seven that are relevant or germane to that to our district there in Hood River. And he's got some testimony that talked to that. And I think there are some other business managers on the phone that can probably address that question, Representative Greenlee.
Here's my basic question to you.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's other things.
You talked about the cost of the individual school district. Now,
well, individual employees actually really isn't costing the districts
individual,
anything out of pocket because most districts have caps.
Even individual employees. That, let's say we start from the issue from a state perspective that if we have 15,000 in a pool, we can save amount of money because of the pool. Now we offer a system that takes the 25% lowest risk out of that pool. So now the people who are left, those that are below the midpoint of risk, have a lower rate. Those that are above the midpoint of risk have a higher rate. So now we drop those below the midpoint off because they would be cheaper not being in there. I mean, we end up, if we do that, only with a very high-risk set of school districts, not people, but school districts in the pool. And part of the problem that I've been resisting change, particularly with the question of the health insurance exchange, which we hope will eventually have the OIB and the PEB in it, is that if we've really distorted that composite risk in the interim, that we end up, I mean, between now and then, that we end up with only high-risk school districts in the plan. I think, in a sense, that's what we've been trying to cope with in these kind of... This is one of about four bills we've been looking at in this
mm-hmm.
session. Well, I guess there's no question mark at the end of anything I just said.
Thinking out loud, it works.
Yeah, well.
Yes. Representative Doherty.
I have one follow-up question. Is there a distinct possibility the task force could come back and say we can't find something else and that we want to stay where we are?
Certainly.
Okay.
I don't think they're locked into making any predetermined
and
decisions.
Just so we're basically today just or yeah. whenever we vote on it.
Yeah, the language
just
is
a task force.
Very non, you know, committal in terms of what that yeah. recommendation will be.
Well, that's what I thought, but I just
yeah,
wanted to
and
check.
You know the appointee, you know they're Senate appointees, there are House appointees, and Governor appointees, and so forth. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of individuals.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, you represent a school board as well as being a state representative. You're not the biggest kid on the block. You're not the smallest kid on the block. Can you just share with us a little bit what a change like this would mean if you were able to not be part of the system in a district your size? I'm assuming since, you know, again, you don't have the economy of scale, you're not a Portland Public and you're not a, you know, Salem Kaiser. You know, if you feel as a mid-tier, smaller district, I mean, how many kids are in your district?
4,000.
And, you know, then how would this impact your day if you were able to make this change? Because as a medium-tier school district, you know, who's advocating for a change, I would think you wouldn't have the economy of scale to make it better, but you're saying that your research is telling you it's possible,
well,
yes.
Representative Parrish, thank you. At this point in time, that's a difficult thing to quantify. We would have to have the authority to look mm-hmm. for other options in order to find the answer to that. So this is just simply an opportunity. Ideally, under the original bill, yes, that we would have had the opportunity to go and prove that we could find less expensive alternatives, and then if we could quantify that, then we could opt out for a period of 3 years. This just simply authorizes the creation of modifies the creation of the task force that already was a part of the Senate bill. So this wouldn't necessarily in and of itself do that.
Just a quick follow-up. So essentially then, without a green light from this body, you're kind of stuck in a position where you don't really know, and yet we've essentially
that's correct.
Going to continue to accumulate costs for another
this would be business
year
as
that are going
prescribed
to
for at least the next 2 years.
Your day somewhere.
Correct.
Thank you.
Anything else? I'm going to interject here for just a moment since we're losing some people to other committee meetings. Wednesday is our last meeting to move bills from the House. If everybody could try to be here on time for that, I'm saying that knowing that I'm usually late, we can get started earlier with a quorum, and Representative Greenlick and I have a 5:30 meeting, so I guess that kind of says we're going to try to get you people out of here by 5:30, or Representatives Kennemer and Cannon will be finishing up. So
you don't want that.
The closer we can start with a quorum to 3 o'clock, the better off we're going to be. Okay, and with that, we have two people on the phone. Anything else for you? Okay. You're welcome to stay, obviously. We have Kathy Brown and John Rexford on the phone. Kathy, would you like to speak first? And please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. This is Kathy Brown with Oregon Trail School District. Thank you for listening to us. We are speaking in support of House Bill 3478. The OEB board specifically has the duty to provide high-quality health, dental, and other benefit plans at a cost affordable to the district, employees, and taxpayers of Oregon. The average percentage of increase for our premium plans over the last 3 years prior to OEB was 28.4%. Over the last 3 years we have been in OEB, the average percentage of increase has been 49.77%. The highest percent increase over the last 3 years was Providence at 56.7% over the last 3 years. The board also charges 2% premium cost for its administrative cost, which is an additional amount added to our premiums. This is also an additional cost to our district. These increases equate to staff asking for more fringe benefit dollars. This OEB mandate hurts districts. In the last decade, we haven't seen this type of escalation in rates, and if we had, we would have been shopping for another carrier. The creation of OEB took away competition and free enterprise. It has allowed for three companies to grow beyond their capacity. The mandated participation in OEB has stripped the district in so many ways, one of which is our industry utilization records. We need those for our carriers to bid our entity. Those records should be kept district-specific. The ability to select coverage that is most important to district staff has been taken away. We do not want concierge service that seems to be important to OEB, taxpayer money paying for attorney services, hotel accommodations, and the ability to purchase tickets, theater tickets, at a discount is only important to OEB. These types of services that OEB has selected has a cost, and that cost translates to premiums. The shackling of our district into this methodology is wrong. It has not saved taxpayer money. It has not worked as designed. There must be an avenue for districts to opt out and take control of our insurance coverage, bringing back free enterprise and competition, which will reduce rates. We are respectfully requesting House Bill 3478 be given consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. John, do you want to testify, and then we'll have questions for both of you?
Absolutely. My name is John Rexford. I currently serve as the Deputy Superintendent for Bend Lapine Schools, and I speak in support of the Dash 2 amendments of House Bill 3478. I think my colleague from Oregon Trail has done a great job of giving you a quick overview of our concerns, so I want to just touch on a couple and maybe expand briefly. I've been with the school district over 20 years, and I've been involved in collective bargaining and health insurance issues for most of that time. During that time, we've worked hard to provide good health and coverage for our employees and their dependents. We've tried to encourage employees to make good choices to meet their family needs. We've been involved in ongoing plan modifications on an annual basis to create plan design and insurance products that meet the needs of our families. We have ongoing concerns about the current implementation of OEB. In particular, my colleague from Oregon Trail described the increases that we've seen over the past 3 years, primarily felt by the pocketbook of our employees, as we too have an insurance cap. So the great preponderance of those additional expenses have gone on to the individual employee and their families. We've listened to many OEB representatives claim tremendous savings during this time. We just simply disagree. Two examples, when employees can no longer afford large premium increases and they slide down to a lesser plan, that's considered to be savings under OEB's calculations. In addition, we found that their internal evaluations of competitive plans tend to undervalue the plans of their competitors, and those are created and designated as savings. Several other significant concerns and I think it really reflects back on the claim of savings. Even though, and I think most of you are familiar with healthcare, understand that Bend Lapine and other districts in Central Oregon are not known for our, exactly our low medical cost experience. Even based on that, we had a bona fide proposal for the current year, which would have saved the district and our employees $1.5 to $2.3 million per year. Just to give you a scope, that's for about 1,500 employees. We estimate that on a Central Oregon basis, that would have been $3 to $4 million. We're really looking for that flexibility to create plans that meet the needs of our families, because the huge increases have caused, I think, some very unintended effects. Because we have the option of just composite rates or a four-tier, multi-tier rate, what we find is under the composite rates, the single employees under our cap are driven out of coverage. And if we were to go to a four-tier rate, we'd find our families moving away from coverage. If our bottom line goal is to create an appropriate level of health care, make it available for our families and employees, we're not meeting that mark, and we're looking for any options that we may have to improve the situation in the future. Thanks for your consideration. We do encourage passage of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3478.
Thank you. Are there questions for John or Kathy? Representative Doherty?
This is Representative Doherty from the Tigard area, and I'm not quite sure if this would be for you two or for Representative Johnson, but the testimony you've been given, I'm getting the impression that that the amendment that you were talking about does not really talk about creating a task force. It sounds like you're under the assumption that the decision has already been made that that you'll be able to opt out of OAB.
I
thought that this amendment was just to form a task force, but one of the results could be that they come back and say, no, nobody can opt out.
Yeah, John Rexford speaking here. I am looking for any options that we can create, whether that's a straight opt-out or as the Dash 2 amendments propose, a task force to study the issue. Anything that moves this issue along is better than the status quo.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So you kind of answered a little bit my question. I want to clarify again. Obviously, you're advocating that we accept the Dash 2, start a task force, but you're also okay with it just as it sat. Was that correct?
Yeah, I'm actually very, again, John Rexford speaking. We support the original opt-out option also, but we do not want to get out of this session without at least moving forward with resolving some of the issues we have with OAB.
You know, I guess I'm okay giving you a task force. I guess I'm less okay with the fact that, you know, we seem to be struggling to get to yes on finding ways to help school districts save money, restructure their costs, and use those dollars in our classroom to serve our children. So I'm not, you know, super comfortable with the task force idea when really we should just get to yes on the bill as it's sitting and give people a shot to go do what Representative Johnson said, which is let them have a green light to yes to go see if this makes a difference by giving them the option. They can't even go out and hunt and chase prices until we say yes. And a task force certainly isn't going to solve that problem. I will do the task force piece, I guess, if that's all we can do, but I'm not really comfortable letting this slide on for another year. As we're, I know Ben Lapine, specifically, having talked to your superintendent, that you're cutting a significant amount of either staff or days to fill your budget gaps, and we're not giving you the tools to make that happen. So I just wanted to clarify that you were okay with us if we actually could get to yes on the original bill.
John Rexford speaking. We would support the original bill.
Mr. Chair, just a quick clarifying comment. The task force is already in statute. It's going to happen. This just refines the focus of the task force to school district impact. Okay, that's the only change in what the proposed language in the amendment would do. It just focuses on the effect of the school at the school district level of the OEBB organization as it has existed. So the task force will be convened. It already is charged. It's part of the legislation. This doesn't create a new task force. This is just reauthorizes or refocuses the intent of that task force. So just a clarifying statement.
Thank you. Representative Cannon.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This could be for you, Representative Johnson, or maybe somebody on the phone. I do want to ask the question. I want to try again at this. Let's imagine that there were just two school districts in the state for the purpose of simplicity, and they were both in OEB. And we did this task force, and it indicated that the effect of opting out for one would be to save them some dollars. Okay, let's assume that the other looked at it and said, it doesn't look like it's going to save us any money, so we're not going to opt out. Okay, so that would appear to suggest that, I think to proponents of the bill, that that school district that would save money by opting out should opt out, should be allowed to do so. But I think there is another question that we need to make sure this task force asks, and that is, what happens to the experience of the district that's still in when District A opts out? What happens to the costs of B? And that's why I think this statewide question is the most important one. We cannot look simply at a district-by-district basis, because what District A does will affect, at least in theory, what District B and C and D, who stay in OEB, experience. And I just hope there's a way through this discussion to bring that question to the table.
Representative Cannon, I would agree. I would hope that that task force could look at it from all angles. Exactly. What the options would be like for those districts who, if in fact they, you know, if they can demonstrate that they have potential savings outside of OEB, but also the impact of those districts, you know, what would be the effect upon them. It needs to be a comprehensive look. But again, this is targeted towards those folks who are impacted by that, who are school districts, not state employees per se, but the school districts who are underneath the auspices of OEBB.
Thank you.
Well, it's not state employees, but it's state money.
Yeah.
But oh, I'm sorry.
I guess I just still have a little bit of concern, Representative Johnson. I'd like you to be able to answer this for
You're
me.
You're going nowhere.
Having worked in a school district, having to be responsible for managing my own costs, and yes, it's nice to be able to hitch your wagons to somebody else for the purpose of, like, say, a milk bid, right, as I'm doing nutrition services stuff. I guess I'm concerned that we're really married to this concept that we should have this be a statewide pool. And yet we say local control, and we want to give local control to that individual school, yet we don't do that for salaries, we don't do it for anything else, and we split the cost model and say we want on this pool have it be at the state level, and on this pool manage it at the local level, and when you do that, your efficiencies and your economy scales essentially don't match up. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because essentially we're splitting the horse from the cart here and saying at the state level you are going to have to opt into this, but over here you have to control this at the local level. Those things don't align, and I think that's part of your cost drivers, but I'm not sure. I'd like to hear you address that.
Well, again, districts are, as I was on the trail, if you will, during the campaign season that concluded last year, virtually every discussion I had with anybody at any school district level referred to OEB, that it wasn't working as advertised. It was, in fact, quite the opposite. Instead of controlling costs or reducing costs, costs were escalating. And it was they were very concerned about the impact on their employees. Some districts, as you heard our witness from Ben Lapine, have actually done the research, and they have information telling them that if they could opt out and go another path, they could save anywhere between $2 to $3 million right now. They've quantified that already. They have that on paper. It's difficult, I believe, and others may speak to this, but it's difficult right now for some districts to quantify that because OEB controls maintains the records for all of those employees. So it's difficult to take your information for your particular district and go out to another insurer and say, here, what kind of deal can you give us? Because I don't believe many of them have access to that information. So that's one of the other downfalls, I guess. But again, a comprehensive viewpoint or evaluation of what currently is it going on by this task force, hopefully, we'll take into account all of those situations to where we can really have an apples-to-apples discussion, I guess, about what is actually working and what is not. So does that help? Thank you.
Representative Jordy?
And again, with the task force, and it's kind of a cautionary tale down the road, is that, I mean, we've done this before because we could not get the experience rating from Oregon School Boards Association when we wanted to go through. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much of a monopoly. It was a good program and so on. But the Blues were not chosen as one of the companies for either PEB or for OEB. Mm-hmm. And so I guess a cautionary tale is when first of all, you know, the idea of experience rating is going to be very difficult. and I don't know if you can do any safeguards about, like, locking in rates, because I can see something coming, somebody coming in really low.
Sure.
And getting you. And getting to the point that it's like when you subcontract buses, bus services in schools, you have to sell all your buses. And so you're almost locked into subcontracting buses forever and ever because the district can't afford to go back into it. And I just don't want that to happen with insurance when it comes to school districts. So it's kind of a cautionary tale if a task force goes through saying this is also something you really need to look at are the promises of companies that are coming in.
Okay. Kathy and John, we have three more people here in the Capitol to testify. You're welcome to stay online if you'd like, and we'll interact with you later.
Okay,
and
thank you.
With that, I will call Mr. Bennett, Mr. Rose, and Mr. Black. Appreciate it if each of you could be brief.
Ms. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'm also here representing Salem-Keizer School District as well as the Oregon Small Schools Association in support of the Dash 2 amendments, as described by Representative Johnson. Again, the task force exists. This merely adds individual school district analysis to the work that they're going to be doing, whether this bill passes or not. It just ensures that individual districts will be analyzed. You've heard that health insurance is a major cost factor. There are really different opinions among school districts as to the impact OEB has had on their costs, whether they can be lowered or improved with different coverage. We believe this is a chance to clarify that. We also are concerned, I think, as Representative Cannon has pointed out and Representative Greenlick, with what the impact is on districts that don't leave the system if an opt-out were the opportunity offered, and would hope that the task force would look at that issue as well. It's certainly an issue that's been of concern to school districts that we represent statewide. So we believe this is a chance to this task force was put into the law originally in just for this opportunity. What's too bad is when the task force was put into the law, they didn't include going both statewide and to the individual district. And I really thank Representative Johnson for correcting what I think was genuinely an oversight at the time the OEB law was adopted. Thank you.
Next.
Okay. Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Justin Black. I'm from the Oregon Education Association. We represent over 40,000 educators throughout the state, many of whom receive their benefits through OEB. I'm here neutral, mainly for one point. I think we agree with Representative Cannon. We believe that there are two ways to look at this, and it's important to not miss the statewide and overall value of OEB. Our members, you know, we believe, and two actuaries have confirmed this, that OEB overall is saving lots and lots of money. And it's important that that discussion happen alongside any savings that are happening with individual school districts. So we feel that if you're going to look at this, it is important to look at this from both sides of the equation. And I will keep it that short.
Thank you. Mr. Rose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I represent the school districts in Washington County. One of them, Beaverton, has opted out, and they show data that's considerable savings. Others would like to. My own view of this discussion is that the idea of the task force addressing the district by district as well as the state would be beneficial in terms of the decisions we need to make down the road. It may be that the larger pool is a better pool overall. It may be that three pools around the state would be a better arrangement for all school districts. It may be that if you do some kinds of rearrange the pools, some group of districts are in fact spending less
And others, like in the equity, we addressed in the equity questions, you may have to subsidize. But the current program of all districts do this or else has not been received well by the school districts. And the issue of gaining the data to make decisions, that was part of the battle we had when we first did this, two or three, or whatever it was, that the people who were had the insurance at that time weren't forthcoming with data to make the analysis that needed to be made. With that, we encourage you to move with the amendments, knowing that the bill as it is not going to go anywhere. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to open with the first question, which is kind of obtuse, but I heard either John or Kathy mention theater tickets. I received an email from a constituent, among other things, referring to the employee support benefit they had in helping them find a veterinarian. Could any of you comment on that? I mean, I'm questioning if we're really in a cost savings curve and we're supplying those kinds of support arrangements. You know, who's watching the cash register?
Is John Rexford still on the phone?
Yeah. John, are you still on the phone?
Yeah, I am.
Would you like to comment on that?
Well, I think it was my colleague from Oregon Trail that spoke to the concierge benefit
okay.
that's included in the current OAB design.
You could have said anything except concierge if you were trying to impress me. But
I really can't speak to the theater ticket / veterinarian referral conundrum. I just know that what should have saved money over the last 3 years has experienced almost 50% premium increases. And I guess, to me, it's really what's the bottom line.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I guess what I just heard you say is that you don't support the bill without the amendments. Would that be a true statement? And then I want to follow up.
Well, from our perspective, we would support the bill with or without the amendments, but we're here to support the amendments
okay.
today.
And the rest of the panel?
Co-Chair Thompson, Representative Parrish, we would be opposed to the original bill, but neutral on the amendments.
Okay. I guess the question I have then again goes back to this notion of if we're asking school districts who we all get up and say we want them to have local control, and we're pooling them into a statewide system, should we do that for the rest of the equation on the ledger of what schools cost and say, well, let's pull everything back at the state, which would include salaries and wages and all other benefits, because that would make everything apples to apples. Right now we're apples to oranges, and would that be an okay solution? Because if schools are looking at cost savings right now, I have concerns that we have not done much to reduce their costs, and the only cost savings that we're going to get to is cutting days and cutting teachers and cutting programs, and I'm not okay with that. If this is a mechanism that's going to save that school district money right now, I'd like to see us move forward with the bill as it is.
Well, certainly, Ms. Chair, Representative Parrish, your sentiment is one shared statewide by school boards and administrators, Uniserv representatives and teachers is we want, I think, to have every tool we can possibly have at our disposal as we begin to deal with the really complicated issues associated with the recession we're in and the impact it's had on school districts. But before us today is really an opportunity to take a look at this, to develop data, and to resolve what is a very difficult issue. Insurance, I've discovered, I've lobbied OEB issues. I've lobbied them in advance of finally losing the issue and having this occur, which I still don't believe was the right choice, but the legislature made it, and we've been working with it. This is our chance to give it a full evaluation through a task force, not just through OEB evaluating itself.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe taking advantage of this at this point in the history of this issue is an opportunity we wouldn't want to miss even in light of, I think, all the issues you're describing, this really gives us a chance to take a look at, is this idea working? It was built into the law at the time. I think what the amendment does is improve it substantially by bringing it down to the individual district level, which is a pretty complicated set of findings. And so we would like to not miss this opportunity. At the same time, there are other bills in the session that would give us other tools that we'd like to have that may not occur as well. I mean, you're expressing the frustration I think we all feel. But I would ask you not to miss this opportunity. This really, I think, will be important as we try to deal with the issue of health insurance in the future. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, we can't move this bill today, but we can incorporate the dash twos. Okay, you're right. I need to close this public hearing. I have a shadow here. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3478, and I will open a work session on 3478 for the purpose of moving the dash two amendments, which I have a funny feeling will come to me very soon as a motion.
Indeed it will.
Oh, you're so subtle.
Chair Thompson, I move to adopt the dash...
Let me just stand at ease for a second.
Okay, let's stand at ease. I will take back everything I said.
Me too.
And so will Representative Boyle. We'll rescind the motion, and we will simply hold this bill over with its dash twos dangling until Wednesday. Is anyone unhappy with that?
No. And when we're ready to move on to a new order of business, I would like to do so.
Okay. I'm going to...
Kathy and John?
Yes.
I'm going to hang up on you now.
You got it.
Okay.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, okay. Mr. Chair.
You know, I could say the concierge service and the that's all in the wellness benefit and the theater tickets and discount.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So we're going to close the work session. Mm-hmm. On House Bill 3478,
right.
And roll everything over until Wednesday, and I believe...
Well, before you, I would like you to go through the list again, but we can take care of yours.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would like to ask that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Widener to vote on House Bill 3185 and Senate Bill 348.
Is there any objection to suspending the rules? Hearing none, they are suspended. Representative Widener, how do you vote?
On
House Bill 3185.
I vote yes on House Bill 3185, and I vote yes on Senate Bill 348.
Thank you. So noted.
Okay. And then just for the record, these are everything we're carrying on to work.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, just for the record, for Wednesday, we are carrying over House Bill 3409, House Bill 2100, House Bill 2726, House Bill 3164, House Bill 3344, possible work sessions.
That's okay.
Yeah, okay.
There's good time.
Okay, and we're also carrying over House Bill 3478. 2271, 3019, and 3559. Anyone else have anything else they'd like to carry over?
Sure.
Sounds like we didn't do anything today, and we really did.
We really did.
So again, if you could be prompt on Wednesday, we have a lot of things to move through here, and we need a quorum to start. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I was detained.
It was not, no, I understand.
In a transportation that was a very hostile environment for a couple of us.
I'm only reminding the committee because usually I'm the one who's late, but if we could all be here, then we'll be out of here by 5:30.
And I have two different committees on Wednesday at 3. I'm testifying on both.
If you have a problem, I understand. We all have multiple committees right now. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, we're going to adjourn the House Committee on Health Care for April 18th, 2011. I will see.